Welcome back, everyone. We're diving into some pretty creepy waters today. We're talking Nosferatu,
Oh, nice.
but not just the movie itself, right?
Yeah.
We're going to be looking at it through this lens of like repression and societal norms and all this stuff. You know, it all ties back to
Do bet.
this film review you sent me from SwissWolf.Siege, which is always a good time, those guys.
Very good.
And it was so interesting because they were comparing the 1922 original to the 2024, the new remake.
Yeah.
And, you know, I never thought about it this way, but they were saying how the Victorian repression stuff, the way it's shown in the new movie, can actually seem kind of funny to us today.
I know, right? Like, it's so true, though, when you really think about how much our views have changed on all this stuff,
Yeah.
right? Like gender roles,
Right.
mental
It's a
health.
completely different world now.
It really is. Like, back in the Victorian era, there was just this expectation that women would be these,
Yeah.
these perfect little angels, right?
Right. Completely controlled.
Emotionally controlled. Like, can you imagine
You're so
being
possessed.
told you can't even be excited about something?
I know. Or like
And forbid, and.
angry. Yeah. Forget about it. Like you're immediately labeled hysterical.
Oh, for sure. Mentally unstable, the whole nine yards. It was all about fitting women into this tiny little box, the pure and passive maiden box.
And that's just not the world we live in anymore. I mean, thank goodness, right?
Seriously,
Yeah.
we've come a long way thanks to some pretty amazing feminist movements.
Totally. And I think you can really see that progress reflected in the media we consume today.
Oh, for sure.
Like strong female characters are the norm now,
Yeah.
and they're allowed to express the full range of human emotion, you know?
Exactly. So when we watch something like the 2024 Nosferatu and we see these really outdated tropes about repression, it's like jarring. It
Right.
almost feels comical because it's so out of touch
Just so out of
with
touch.
our modern sensibilities, which, that's exactly what Swiss Wolf Prefect was saying in the review.
It's like peering into the past, isn't it? Seeing how differently people used to think. But the thing is, even though we've come a long way, these ideas of repression, of hidden emotions, that stuff still pops up in film today, even if it's not always about Victorian women, you
Oh,
know?
absolutely. And in totally different ways, too. I mean, even the SwissWolf.Such review brought up Black Bear with Audrey Plaza
Oh, yeah.
and how it uses like alcohol and hormones to kind of unleash these repressed anxieties and all this tension.
Right. I never thought about it like that.
And then you have something like The Party with Peter Sellers.
Which is a classic, by the way.
Oh, total classic.
Yeah.
But it uses humor
Yeah.
to expose these really awkward truths
Yeah.
about things like racism and social embarrassment and all the stuff that we kind of try to sweep under the rug.
It's like they're saying, hey, you can't ignore this stuff forever, you
It's
know?
exactly. It's still there,
Yeah.
lurking beneath the surface.
Okay, so we're talking about repression. And if we're talking specifically about what the Victorians were trying to repress, how does that compare to like what we're all trying to hide today? What are those things we don't want to talk about?
Well, sexuality was a big one back then.
Oh, yeah.
Like Victorian society was
Really uptight.
incredibly restrictive. Even ankles were considered
I
scandalous.
know. It's
You can
crazy.
even show a little ankle.
Yeah.
And obviously, any kind of sexual desire, especially for women, was seen as
Oh, taboo, big time.
totally taboo,
Yeah.
something to be controlled and suppressed.
Yeah.
And homosexuality,
Oh, forget about it.
that was completely off the table.
Completely off the
It
table.
didn't even exist.
It's wild to think about, isn't it?
It really is. But, even though we've made progress, I think we still have our own hang-ups about sexuality today.
Totally.
Right.
Li just think about all the pressure around body image, for example.
Oh, yeah. It's everywhere.
And that can definitely make people, you know,
For sure.
feel ashamed of their own desires. And it's not just limited to sexuality, right?
Right.
I mean, the SwissWolf.Siege review actually listed a bunch of other things we still repress. Emotional expression, ambition,
Doubts about our faith.
doubts about our faith.
Even just the simple desire to like be independent.
Right. And it's like, why? Why are we still doing this to ourselves?
It's almost like it's human nature to have these thoughts and feelings that we try to keep hidden,
Yeah.
because they either clash with what society expects of us or they challenge the image we want to project to the world.
Oh, totally. So where do these thoughts and feelings go when we repress them? They don't just disappear, right?
Well, that's where things get interesting. The review actually brings up this concept called
Okay.
sub-basis narratives
Sub-base narratives.
by Fabian Virchow.
Okay. This sounds intense.
It's actually pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
It's basically the idea that we all have these base narratives,
okay,
right?
Okay, so the basis narrative is like...
It's basically your core beliefs.
Got it. So your core belief about yourself.
Yeah, and about the world.
Okay.
Often shaped by your culture or how you were raised.
So kind of like your foundation.
Exactly. But then you have these other narratives, these sub-basis narratives.
Right.
And these are the ones that contain all those thoughts and feelings that don't quite fit with your basis narrative.
Oh, I see. So it's like they don't belong.
In the main story you're telling.
Exactly. Yeah. And they're the things we try to keep hidden because they, you know, they threaten our sense of self or they clash with societal norms.
So it's like having this secret mental basement where we store all the stuff we don't want to deal with.
That is a perfect way to put it. Out of sight, out of mind. Right. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
Even though they're hidden, these sub-basis narratives still have an impact on us.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Think about it. Like climate change denial.
Oh, wow.
That's a perfect example
of a
sub-basis narrative clashing with, like, you know,
Umbriella.
Accepted basis narrative of scientific consensus.
Right.
And even though it's like...
A fringe belief.
It's a sub-basis narrative. It has had a huge impact.
Oh, for sure. A real-world impact on the actions. Or inaction, I should say,
right,
of, you know, individuals and governments.
Yeah, that's a powerful example. So it's like these hidden narratives.
Yes.
They actually shape the way we see the world and how we interact with it.
Exactly. And, you know, SwissWeft.T also mentioned how this repression can manifest in things like projection and even prejudice.
Oh, wow.
It's like when we refuse to confront our own shadows, we end up
projecting them onto others. Okay, so this is getting pretty deep. If these hidden narratives are so powerful on an individual level, what happens when you look at them on like a larger scale, like across an entire society?
Oh, that's when things can get really dangerous.
Oh, no.
The review actually suggested that understanding these repressed narratives can help us understand things like extremist ideologies.
Whoa.
Or political movements.
That's a really interesting thought.
Imagine a whole group of people who are like repressing the same types of thoughts and feelings.
Yeah.
They're considered, you know, taboo or unacceptable.
Right. And so it's like it builds up and...
It can create this breeding ground for resentment.
Oh, wow.
And extremism.
I'm starting to see the connection here. So if we don't acknowledge and actually deal with these repressed thoughts and feelings, they can actually...
They can fester.
Fester and then lead to some really destructive outcomes.
Yeah. Both individually and, you know, collectively.
Oh, that's a little scary.
It is a little scary, but it's important to talk about it, you know?
Yeah, I hear you.
It's like, it really highlights how these films, you know, they can tap into these repressed narratives, both personal and societal.
Yeah.
And the 1922 version, the way it relies more on suggestion, on symbolism.
Right.
It really allows viewers to kind of project their own fears and anxieties onto the story.
So it's like the film provides this framework and then our own individual like sub-basis narratives, you know, they fill in the blanks. So it's a unique experience for everyone watching.
Exactly.
Which is pretty cool. And SwissWeft.ch, they were saying that's one of the reasons they think the 22 version is more effective than the 2024 remake.
Right. It all comes down to the cinematic styles, you know? Yeah. Like think about the visuals in the 1922 film.
Okay.
Deep shadows. Minimalist sets.
Yeah.
Those long, drawn-out shots that just create this sense of unease and anticipation.
Right.
It's all about what you don't see.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Which forces you to use your imagination.
It's like when you were a kid and your parents told you to stay out of the attic because it was full of spiders, right?
Exactly.
Like your mind would immediately go wild.
Yes.
Picturing these giant hairy spiders lurking in every corner.
And that's what makes it so scary.
Right.
The 1922 Nosferatu taps into that same primal fear of the unknown.
Oh, that's good.
It lets our imaginations do the heavy lifting.
Okay, yeah.
Whereas the 2024 version, with its more explicit visuals, you know, it's over the top.
It's in your face.
It kind of removes that element of mystery.
Yeah, yeah.
It spells everything out so there's less room for personal interpretation.
Right, and so less room to be actually scared.
Exactly. You said it perfectly.
It's trying too hard.
It's trying way too hard.
And it loses that psychological depth that made the original so effective.
Totally agree. And you know what else SwissWeft.ch pointed out in their review?
What's up?
They talked about how
okay,
our attitudes towards disability.
Oh, yeah.
They haven't really evolved as much as our views on, you know, things like sexuality and gender roles.
Right. Like, we've made progress in those areas.
Well, yeah, yeah.
But disability is still kind of stigmatized.
Yeah, it's almost like we're stuck in time.
And they actually compared how these issues were treated in Victorian times to how they're treated now. And it was kind of shocking.
Yeah, it was pretty eye-opening.
They talked about social acceptance, marriage and relationships.
Job opportunities. Profiling by law enforcement.
It's crazy to think we're still dealing with this stuff, you know?
It really is. And I think the way we portray disability in film and television often reinforces these stereotypes, you know?
Totally.
Like, how many times have we seen characters with disabilities?
Oh, yeah.
Depicted as either, you know,
like tragic figures.
Tragic figures.
Well, that's or superhuman.
Superhuman heroes.
Overcoming all odds.
Right. We rarely see these nuanced portrayals of people with disabilities just living their lives.
Right.
Having relationships. Facing
everyday challenges.
Everyday challenges. Just like anyone else.
It's true. So it's like this idea that people with disabilities are somehow other instead of just being people with different abilities.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about social acceptance, you know?
Okay.
Even with laws like the ADA, people with disabilities still encounter so much prejudice.
I mean, think about it. You've probably seen this yourself.
Oh, I have, definitely.
Like microaggressions, assumptions about their capabilities.
Assumptions all the time.
And social media, while it can be a platform for, you know, more representation.
For sure.
It can also lead to this unwanted scrutiny and pressure to be inspirational all the time, you know?
It's exhausting.
It's a double-edged sword.
It really is.
Yeah.
And then you have the whole area of marriage and relationships.
Right.
The stigma is still so strong.
Like, can they even have a fulfilling partnership?
Right.
Yeah.
Are they even desirable?
And it's not just societal attitudes either.
Really?
Like, I mean, there are practical challenges too.
Like what?
Like accessible dating apps, social venues, that kind of stuff. It's a huge barrier. Totally.
Yeah.
And even when people with disabilities do find partners.
Right.
They often face
judgment. All this judgment.
Judgment, intrusive questions.
And especially about intimacy.
Like, people just can't grasp.
Yeah.
That someone with a disability can also have a happy and healthy romantic life.
It's mind-boggling, really.
It's really disheartening. And of course, we can't forget about
employment
challenges.
Yes. Despite all the legal protections, people with disabilities, they face so much discrimination in the workplace.
It's not even just about getting a job. It's about
opportunities, right?
Opportunities for advancement, being treated with respect.
For sure. And so many companies still don't fully utilize accessible technology.
Right.
Or create truly inclusive work environments. So
people with disabilities end up stuck.
Stuck in lower paying positions.
Yeah.
Or excluded altogether.
It's frustrating.
It really is. And it doesn't stop there.
Oh, no.
They're also more likely to be profiled by law enforcement.
Oh, wow.
And unfairly treated within the legal system.
Because of misunderstandings.
Misunderstandings about disabilities can escalate situations so quickly.
Yeah.
And these stereotypes about people with disabilities being, you know, angry or difficult.
Yeah, angry or difficult.
And that leads to biased judgments, unfair treatment.
Cool.
It's like we're still viewing disability through this lens of
fear
and distrust.
Fear and distrust, yeah.
Which is so harmful.
So harmful. And I guess this all ties back into this theme of repression, right?
It does.
Like silencing the voices and experiences of people with disabilities.
Denying them the autonomy to live on their own terms.
So what can we do?
Yeah.
How do we challenge these outdated views and promote genuine inclusion?
That's a really complex question.
Yeah.
But I think recognizing and dismantling ableism.
Okay.
Which is so ingrained in our culture.
Right. Yeah.
That's a crucial first step, you know?
Yeah.
We need to challenge stereotypes, educate ourselves about the lived experiences of people with disabilities.
Yeah.
Advocate for policies that promote accessibility and inclusion.
So it's about shifting our perspectives, right?
Yeah.
Instead of seeing disability as a limitation,
we need to recognize it as
a different way of being.
Different way of being in the world.
Exactly. It's about creating a society where everyone,
regardless
of their abilities, can live fully and authentically.
Okay, so circling back to Nosferatu,
Swiftwick,
in their review, they were saying, ultimately, that the 1922 version is more effective because it allows for a greater viewer projection
projection.
And interpretation.
Yeah.
So why do you think, like, why might modern horror movies benefit from that approach?
That's a great question.
Especially in exploring, you know, all these themes of modern day repression.
Well, the power of the original Nosferatu.
Yeah.
It lies in its ambiguity.
Right. It doesn't give you all the answers.
It doesn't spoon feed the viewer.
Yeah.
So it creates this space for us to kind of project
our own
fears and anxieties onto the story.
It's like the movie is a mirror reflecting our own inner darkness back at us.
That's a great way to put it.
So creepy.
I know, right?
But also kind of fascinating.
Yeah, and that's a valuable lesson for modern horror filmmakers.
Like, don't just rely on jump scare.
Exactly. Don't rely on jump scares and gore.
Right, yeah.
You can use atmosphere, symbolism, suggestion to create a more, you know, unsettling and thought-provoking experience.
So it's about engaging with, like, the psychological aspects of horror.
Uh-huh. Those primal fears that we all share.
We try to bury.
But we try to bury deep down.
Exactly. And by exploring these themes of modern day repression in a more like subtle and suggestive way, horror movies could actually become a powerful tool for social commentary.
Ooh, I love that.
Right. Because they can force us to confront these like uncomfortable truths.
About ourselves.
About ourselves and the world around us.
You got it.
Okay, so we covered a lot of ground today.
We did. We
From Victorian era repression to the ways we still repress certain thoughts and feelings in the modern world.
It's a lot to unpack.
Yeah.
So what do you think are some of the key takeaways for our listeners today?
You know, I think the most important takeaway is that repression in all its forms, it's a powerful force.
It really is.
That shapes both our individual lives and society as a whole.
So being aware of those things, we repress.
Yeah.
Both consciously and unconsciously.
Consciously and unconsciously.
Is really crucial.
They're so important.
And understanding how those repressed thoughts and feelings can influence our...
Yeah, our behaviors, relationships, world.
It's like acknowledging that we all have these shadows, these parts of ourselves we try to hide.
And that's the first step toward...
greater self-awareness.
Self-awareness, compassion.
Compassion, yeah.
Absolutely. And I think the other key takeaway is that horror movies, at their best, they can be more than just entertainment, you know? They can be a way of exploring the dark side of human nature.
Yeah.
The things that scare us, the things we repress. Yeah. And in doing so, they can help us understand ourselves and the world a little bit better.
Totally. So for you listening out there, we want to leave you with a few things to think about.
Okay.
What makes you uncomfortable to talk about? Why?
Good question.
What societal norms might be contributing to your own repressed thoughts or feelings?
And think about your favorite horror movies.
Oh, yeah.
What do they reveal about the things we, as a society, try to repress?
What anxieties are they tapping into?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Because sometimes facing our fears head on can be the most liberating thing we can do.
I love that.
You know, I was thinking about this, how all these themes of repression in Nosferatu.
Yeah.
They actually kind of connect to the idea of sub-basis narratives we were talking about earlier.
Oh, interesting.
Like the vampire itself, you know, this creature that's lurking in the shadows with this insatiable thirst for blood.
Right.
It almost perfectly embodies those, like, those repressed urges and anxieties that are just simmering beneath the surface of society.
It's like the vampire represents all those desires, all those impulses that were considered, you know, taboo.
Dangerous. Especially during the Victorian era.
For sure.
It's like it's a stand-in for everything they tried so hard to keep hidden.
And the way vampires prey on their victims, you know?
Yeah.
It's often portrayed as this very intimate act.
Right, almost sensual.
Almost sensual, yeah.
Which could be seen as like a metaphor.
Ooh, I like that.
For how these repressed desires can like completely consume us.
If we're not careful.
If we don't deal with them.
It's as if those desires when they're denied and pushed down for too long, they twist and warp into something monstrous.
Right. And it's so interesting how the vampire is both alluring and terrifying at the same time, which speaks to that, like, that complex duality of repression.
Yeah.
We're drawn to these forbidden desires.
Right.
But we're also afraid of the consequences.
Absolutely. It's a constant push and pull.
So if we bring this into the present day, like,
okay,
What kinds of vampires, you know?
Ooh, that's a good one.
What kinds of vampires do you think we're grappling with now? Like what's lurking in our modern
The
shadows?
lurking in our modern
Like just
shadows, yeah.
threatening to break free.
I think it's probably different for everyone, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think you're right.
But if we use this framework of sub-basis narratives, those vampires could be
That's
anything
like
that clashes with our
yeah.
desired self-image or goes against societal
It
expectations.
could be our anger, our sadness,
Could be ambition, those
ambis.
nagging doubts about our faith.
Right. Anything we try to keep hidden.
Exactly. Anything we try to keep hidden.
So it's like we're battling these internal
Like a
monster
monster,
that
yeah.
we've created
We
ourselves
created them.
through this repression.
And they're just as dangerous as any external threat, really.
If we don't learn to deal with them.
You got it. So what can we do?
Well, I mean, I think based on what we've been talking about, it all starts with self-awareness.
Self-awareness, yeah.
Like paying attention to those thoughts and feelings
Yeah.
that we try to bury.
The things that make us squirm a little.
Right? The parts
Yeah.
of ourselves that we don't want to admit are there.
Being honest with ourselves, as uncomfortable as it can be.
It's not always easy.
It's a crucial first step,
And
yeah.
then it's about finding healthy ways
Yeah.
to process and express
Right.
those repressed parts of ourselves.
So therapy,
That's
maybe
journaling,
journaling, creative expression,
creative
or
expression,
sometimes just a heartfelt conversation with someone you trust.
Can make a world of
It's
difference.
almost like turning those monsters into allies,
Right.
learning to accept the fullness of who we are,
Yeah,
shadows and all.
exactly. Because as we've been saying, denying those shadowy parts,
No.
it only makes them stronger,
It really does.
but facing them head on with a
Hey.
bit of, kindness and understanding,
For sure.
it helps us reclaim our power
Reclaim our power.
and live a more authentic life.
Well said. So, to wrap up our deep dive into Nosferatu, repression, and all these fascinating, sometimes scary
Right.
internal landscapes that we all have.
What's the one thing you want our listeners to walk away with today?
That's a tough one.
I think for me, it's that
I've
horror
thought,
movies,
yeah.
when they're done well, I mean, they can act like a mirror to our own
Oh,
minds.
I love that.
They reflect back the things that we're afraid of.
The stuff we try to
The
hide.
stuff we try to hide.
And ultimately, what makes us human?
They remind us that we're all a little bit monstrous.
A little bit
And
monstrous.
that's perfectly okay.
It's okay to be monstrous.
It's embracing those monstrous parts that allows us to become whole.
I love that. So, to you listening out there, the next time you watch a horror movie, don't just let those scares wash over you. Really lean into that discomfort.
The discomfort.
Ask yourself, what is it about this that's making me squirm?
Ooh, yeah, good question.
What are those fears trying to tell you?
Yeah, what are they trying to tell you?
Because sometimes those scary monsters on screen, they can help us understand the ones we carry within.
Oh, that's so
And
true.
maybe.
Maybe facing those internal monsters head on is the
Yeah.
most liberating thing we can do.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into the world of Nosferatu.